The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
How bad is the dividedness of America? Are these differences that can somehow be bridged or reconciled, or is it time finally for the elephants and the donkeys to amicably go our own way? Nikki Haley calls for America to get rid of, quote, self-loathing, but is that really our problem? We loathe ourselves? I'll tell you what I think. Author David Horowitz joins me to talk about his new book, I Can't Breathe, all about systemic racism and white supremacy. And I'll complete my review of Alexander Hamilton by showing how he devised a formula for a modern, urban, commercial, and prosperous society. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy, and a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
There's a new study out from the University of Virginia. This is the Center on Politics there, run by a pretty competent academic, Larry Sabato. And it's an attempt to gauge public opinion in America, to measure the dividedness of America. Now, Sabato's goal is not to exacerbate the dividedness, but to look for areas of common ground. It's sort of a project aimed at seeing if Americans can, in fact, come together on certain key issues. But the latest study pushes very much in the opposite direction. It's a survey. And this is not the kind of one or two question survey that typically is done by media organizations. This is a kind of in-depth, multiple question survey aimed at gauging where exactly Americans not only differ, but to some degree come to blows. A survey of 1,001 Trump voters and 1,011 Biden voters. So it's about the same. This is not one of those rigged surveys we've come to expect. And the conclusion of it, kind of startling, and I'm going to quote Sabato himself, the divide between Trump and Biden voters is deep, wide, and dangerous. The scope is unprecedented, and it will not be easily fixed. So the question I want to look at is, well, first of all, what is this divide really about? And it turns out that neither side really wants to live in the other side's America. That is the sort of take-home conclusion of this survey. Even though the survey goes on to emphasize, very much in keeping with the organization's mission, that there are areas of agreement. And the area of agreement they point to is the fact that Trump voters and Biden voters both believe in supporting infrastructure. Now, I think that this agreement here is more illusory than the authors of this survey think. Let's look at some of the items. They're talking about things like this. Do we want to have improvements in the electric grid and other parts of the power sector? Obviously, most people go, yeah. Do we want to modernize drinking water, wastewater, and stormwater systems? I mean, try to think of the mentality of someone who goes, no, I don't think so. Obviously, almost everyone's going to say yes. What about investing in the construction of roads and bridges and rail lines and ports? Well, again, in principle, who is against these things? Even if you go down to something that's a little bit more taken from the left's grab bag, making community college free, well, as an aspiration, of course, I support that. Who wouldn't want to have free education to set you on the road to life? Of course, in a normal person's ordinary consideration, it's kind of like if, you know, Debbie were to say to me, in fact, as she did say to me when we first moved into our new house in Texas, she's like, we got to buy a generator. And I'm like, well, how much is that? She's like, well, it's probably around $25,000 for a really nice one. I'm like, do we really need a generator? So this is like giving me a survey. Dinesh, what do you think of the idea of having a generator? Great idea. $25,000. Doesn't sound so good after all. So right here, you get to the normal conflicts that people have when they have to measure the benefit of something with the cost. So simply to enlist people on behalf of the idea and then claim, wow, look, Americans don't really just, everybody wants a bridge. This is like, this is not exactly a highly sophisticated analysis. Now, the real rub of the survey was the question that asked, well, two of them really. One of them was, it seems like there's a willingness on both sides, on the left and on the right, to skirt around constitutional processes to get things done. A rather, I would say, alarming percentage of both Democrats and Republicans said things like, well, you know, we should be able to get things done on our way, whatever the Constitution says. Not good. Or the idea that we can circumvent legislative processes to achieve our goals. Now, 52% of Trump voters say, you know what? It's time to secede. We've had enough of the other side. And so they either strongly agree or somewhat agree. But when you add the strongly and somewhat agrees on the Biden side, this is interesting, on the Democratic side, 41%. So adding them up, we've got 93% of Americans, think about this, saying that they strongly or somewhat agree that this national marriage is not working out. It may be time to say goodbye. All good things must come to an end. It was good while it lasted, but we don't really want to inhabit the kind of society that you're pushing for. Now, of course, all kinds of people have pointed out that a civil war is unlikely, and I agree. They've also pointed out that there is, because of history, the history of the Civil War and the aftermath of the Civil War, you can't get unilateral dissolution. One party can't say, well, you can in a divorce. You can have no-fault divorce. One party can walk out, even though two parties made the contract. But when it comes to secession, that's not going to work. You actually need the consent of both sides. And the question is, why would the other side allow it? If the left is in control of the reins of government as they are now, why wouldn't they want us to force, why wouldn't they want to force us to live in their America? Now, we're not exactly like them. Many of us would be like, we don't want to force you to live in our America. If you don't like the national anthem, don't sing it. You know, create your own alternative America or go your own way. But that doesn't seem to be their mentality. And so what is our remedy? Well, I want to suggest one. A remedy that might actually be a practical remedy in the years going forward. It's a remedy that comes out of the old days when actually divorces were very, very hard to get. And a lot of wives were sort of, you know, they were very unhappy in their marriages, but they didn't know what to do. So here's what they did do. They basically made their husbands' lives miserable. they essentially made it almost unlivable because they, everything that the other guy wants to do, they go, no, I don't want to do that. I'm not going. Or no. And so what you essentially do is you make ordinary life so onerous and so tedious and so painful that even though the other guy likes to rule over you and tell you what to do, at some point it becomes too exhausting, too unmanageable. And then even that guy who has the power shrugs his shoulders and goes, all right, let's go our separate ways. Guys, you've heard me talk about MyPillow, but now Mike has done it again by introducing his new My Slippers. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop these amazing slippers. They're designed to wear indoor or outdoor all day long, made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. They're made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, Mike is offering 50% off his new My Slippers. Hey, great time to get some Christmas presents and keep them for Christmas time. Now, the mice slippers are so comfortable, you're going to want to get some for the whole family. We actually did. Here's Danielle with her moccasins. Of course, Debbie and I just love ours. I got the moccasins. She got the slip-ons. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh. By the way, you'll get deep discounts there on all the other stuff. The Giza Dream bed sheets, the MyPillow robes, the mattress topper, the MyPillow towel sets. Call 800-876-0227. That number, 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. To get the discounts, you've got to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. I want to continue my discussion of the dividedness of America, but approach it from a little different angle. In the last segment, I talked about the University of Virginia study about how far apart the two sides are today and seem to be pulling further apart. But now I want to approach the same topic by looking at something that Nikki Haley just said. Nikki Haley, former ambassador to the United Nations under Trump, and someone who's been on this podcast, and someone whose views I respect on foreign policy. Nikki Haley just spoke at the Ronald Reagan Foundation and Library, and she said that our problem is that we have, quote, national self-loathing. She goes on to say that stopping this national self-loathing is, quote, the most important mission of our time. Quoting her, the barbarians of the world fear nothing more than a strong United States with the confidence and courage of our convictions. This is, by the way, a speech given in the Reaganite mode. If you remember Jean Kirkpatrick talking about the Americans and we Americans and the anti-Americans. And Nikki Haley says Americans are, quote, plagued by self-doubt, a, quote, pandemic much more damaging than any virus. But I don't think that we are, I don't think that this kind of rhetoric really works anymore. But I want to try to put my finger on why. It's a little antique. It sounds off-key to me. Is it really the problem that we have a national, quote, self-loathing? Do we loathe ourselves collectively as a country? I don't think so. The problem is really something different. The problem is not that we loathe ourselves. In fact, even if you divide America into the right and the right doesn't loathe itself, and the left doesn't loathe itself. It's really more accurate to say that we loathe them and they loathe us. That is the very opposite of self-loathing. It's the loathing of the other guy and where they're trying to take us. So even in some ways, I think the rhetoric of that we've used a lot on our side even now, that they are anti-American, probably a rhetoric that Nikki Haley would go along. In fact, she says, in fact, that the idea that America is bad is, quote, the bedrock belief of the American left, that they don't believe in America. They've given up on America. But she doesn't mean America per se, because they too are Americans. They have only given up on our America. They've given up on traditional America. And they're not anti-American in the sense that they're just against anything that happens in America. They want to create their own America. They want to create a different America, and they are patriotic toward, you may say, their America. Let's take a moment to think of what their America would look like. It would be an America in which you'd have the vast majority of citizens essentially dependent on the state. Everybody would be getting their, they'd be lining up to get their food card and to get their, where can I go live? Where can I get my electricity? Where should I go work? If I work at all, there would be a one-party state. There would be essentially a Democratic Party and a Republican Party made up of sort of a bunch of Romneys who would essentially give pompous proclamations but never really do anything. So the left would be unquestionably in charge. You'd have a completely sexually permissive society. Anything goes. No restrictions in that area whatsoever. You'd have a racial hierarchy, but it would be the exact opposite of the past. You'd have a totem pole. Basically, blacks would be on the top. Hispanics would probably be in the middle. people, whites and Asian Americans, would be at the bottom. Everybody would worship the state. No one would really be going to church. Churches might exist, and they're probably going to be, the left-wing churches, of course, would be left alone. There'd probably be more mosques in America than churches. But the state would really be the object of, so this is their America. This is what they want. They don't want an America with strong nuclear families, decentralized authority, individualism. All of this would be kind of extinguished. So this is their America. They'd be very patriotic in that America. They'd be very willing to salute the rainbow flag. So when we talk today, as Nikki Haley does and so many other people do, about our American flag, well, we don't really have that kind of a unifying flag anymore. The other side doesn't like the flag. Our national anthem. They don't want to sing the anthem. We can't really make them our founding fathers. Well, yeah, the founding fathers did found the country, but they have, they're kind of like children who have repudiated their parents, who have demanded, if you will, liberation, emancipation from their parents. So Nikki Haley's rhetoric presumes a unity or a potential unity that I think doesn't even really exist. Now, David French in a, yesterday I did a segment on David French. Debbie was like, again, we're back to him. But David French put out, you know, some studies in response to my video. He's, in fact, he was saying something like, you know, this video has a lot of mockery in it, and mockery is not an argument. That is often said by people who don't like being mocked. There's no reason mockery can't go along with argument. Consider Nietzsche. Wasn't he a philosopher? Yes, he was. Did he do a lot of mockery? Yes, he did. But let's come back to David French, because David French says, we agree on so much. What are we fighting about? And the point I want to make is we're fighting about the critical things. It's kind of like going to Martin Luther and the Reformation and saying, well, listen, why are you trying to break away from the church? I mean, you agree there's one God, right? You agree he made the world, right? So what are we fighting about? So the idea here is to minimize serious differences that go to the heart of things that are really important to people, and say, why are you pulling in opposite directions? This seems irrational to me. Because maybe those issues aren't so important to you, but they're very important to the people involved in them. So again, I don't think this dividedness is going away very easily. We can't wish it away. We can't produce a survey. Look, it doesn't really exist. The Reformation proceeded because the people in the Reformation felt strongly enough that the church had been taken over, had gone the wrong path. So it is with America. There are many of us on both sides of the aisle who don't want to really inhabit the other guy's home, the kind of America that the other side is determined to build. And so the question then becomes, can we amicably say, hey, guys, this isn't really working out. Let's either figure out a way to live separate lives in the same America, kind of like in the same house, or let's figure out a way for each of us to build our own rival utopia. Inflation is running hot right at the highest of the last couple of decades. And now the Dems are trying to push through another massive spending plan, $3.5 trillion. So here's the deal. If you think money grows on trees like our government does, well, you can keep living in ignorance. But if you're freaked out as I am by the impact that this additional spending is going to have on already high inflation, well, it's time to protect your savings now. Diversify a portion of your savings into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. Now, if you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them, have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert on holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. Biden's disastrous failures on, well, not just the Afghanistan front, but every front are emboldening the enemies of America in a way that is really a little terrifying to witness. Right at the forefront of this, China. So China is now making very aggressive moves toward Taiwan in all kinds of ways. Moves so aggressive that the Taiwanese have already sort of sounded the alarm. Not quite the emergency, but close to it. Taiwan is also reaching out to other countries, recognizing that they can't really count on the United States. I mean, think about this. Taiwan, which has essentially relied for its existence on the promise that the United States would be by their side and perhaps fighting alongside them to repel a Chinese invasion. But does anyone believe that, you know, Blinken and Jake Sullivan and Biden are going to act in any meaningful way? I don't think so. I don't think the Taiwanese do either. So recently, Taiwan's foreign minister, Joseph Wu, has been reaching out to Australia. The Taiwanese are trying to build their own alliances in the region. And they've also been boosting their defenses. Why? Because what China's been doing is they've been sending warplanes, I mean, very sophisticated warplanes, into Taiwanese airspace, a dramatic escalation of Chinese aggression. And, of course, when Biden was asked about this, he sort of drawls meaninglessly and says something like, you know, he goes, I've spoken with Xi about Taiwan. We agree. We're going to abide by the Taiwan Agreement. First of all, this is like a kind of Neville Chamberlainism, by which I mean this agreement basically says that the United States will agree to recognize China and not Taiwan, in the understanding that any future of the two, Taiwan and China, will be determined peacefully. But China has no intention of doing that. In fact, there are some reports, very disturbing, that the Chinese generals are telling Xi, now's the time. Now's when America's weak. Now's the time when America wouldn't dare. Biden wouldn't dare. Just give us the green light. The Global Times, which is kind of it's a Chinese publication, but sort of a Chinese state media, an instrument of the regime. And they have a very interesting article in which they say that the point of sending these planes into Taiwanese airspace is reconnaissance. It says that the operations are designed to, quote, familiarize pilots with battlefield conditions. So once the order is given, they'll know exactly how to carry out the attack. So there's a lot of talk in China about an impending attack. Quote, the initiative of when and how to solve the Taiwan question is firmly in the hands of the Chinese mainland. So the Chinese don't think that there's some kind of international agreement that has to occur. Not at all. They believe Taiwan is ours. Taiwan is part of China. Yes, it broke away from China when China went communist, but it is China. And so this idea that Taiwan is part of China, I think signals that the Chinese would be willing to pay a very high price to take Taiwan. It's kind of like saying, what price would America pay, for example, to take back Florida? The answer is, I don't even think we would count the cost. Florida is part of the United States. End of story. So this is not the case where the Chinese see this as occupying another country. We have to weigh the pluses and minuses. What kind of price would we have to pay? What kind of resistance can the Taiwanese put up? Now, the Taiwan president, Tsai, elected in 2016, she says, remember that if Taiwan were to fall, the consequences would be catastrophic for regional peace and the democratic alliance system. It would signal that in today's global contest of values, authoritarianism has the upper hand over democracy. So she's saying two things. One, China will have established itself unquestionably as the dominant force in Asia. Every other Asian country would have to take note of that. But more than that, if you look at the world and think of two rival models, the sort of liberal democratic model that is largely describes the West and the sort of authoritarian centralized state model that China represents, well, essentially this would be a great victory for authoritarianism, for communism over democracy. Aches and pains are kind of a part of life. They come to us all eventually, whether from the normal wear and tear of time or from injury. Now, we have a choice, either to feel trapped by aches and pains or we can fight back against them. The tools are different from a decade or more ago. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation that is the source of aches and pains. About 70% of the over 500,000 people who try Relief Factor order more. Why? Because it works for them. You have nothing to fear and everything to gain. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? Now, typically, advertisers send us products and both Debbie and I try them. Debbie's been suffering with frozen shoulder for a couple of years now, and well, she tried Relief Factor. To her amazement, 2 weeks later, she could lift her arm. And not only could she lift it, but it no longer hurt. Well, she got busy and forgot to order more. Unfortunately, the pain came right back. So Debbie now knows she's never going to be without Relief Factor again. We also had her Aunt Karen try it. It worked so well that we have now purchased a subscription for her. You can benefit too. Your first step to becoming pain-free might be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246. That number again, 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246. Feel the difference. I can't really say I'm familiar with the ESPN host Sage Steele. This is a black woman, actually a mixed race woman, who does commentary on ESPN. I'm not a regular watcher of ESPN. I do like sports. I'm watching these days tennis, the tournament that is in California going on Indian Wells. But Sage Steele got into trouble because she gave an interview on Jay Cutler's podcast. Jay Cutler is a former quarterback with the Chicago Bears. And this is a woman that is clearly very spunky, very outspoken, has real personality. And she leans right. She's kind of right up center in a kind of chatty and quite engaging way. So she apparently made some comments that have upset ESPN, and so she's been suspended. Now, let's look at these comments because, again, we see that this has now become endemic in our society, this idea that you say something and your bosses take umbrage, but it's always something that is, right-leaning and most often true. So first she makes some comments about the vaccine. And her comments are actually, I think, quite benign. She goes, "I respect everyone's decision. I really do. But to mandate it is sick and scary to me in many ways." She goes, "But I have a job I love, and frankly, a job I need." So what she's saying is, listen, you know, Disney, which by the way owns ESPN, Disney forced me, and so I took the vaccine. But you know what? I wasn't all that happy about being forced. Not that I wasn't happy about taking the vaccine, but I wasn't happy about them making me do it. Now, the really offensive comments that she made had to do with Obama, and I've got to read these because they're they're just downright great. So the topic came up on the podcast about Sage Steele being required to fill out the census form and how it basically asks you, are you black? Are you white? And her point is, this is ridiculous. I'm not black and I'm not white. I'm actually both. I'm biracial. I'm multiracial. Why in America are we racializing everybody in this kind of way? And so here is the money quote, as they say. I'm going to read it to you. And this is Sage Steele talking. "If they make you choose a race, what are you going to put?" She goes, "Well, both," referring to herself. She goes, "Barack Obama chose black and he's biracial." And then she says sarcastically, "Congratulations to the president. That's his thing." And then she says, "I think it's fascinating considering his black dad is nowhere to be found, but his white mom and grandma raised him. But okay, you do you. I'm going to do me. Listen, I'm pretty sure my white mom was there when I was born and my white family loves me as much as my black family." That's what she said. What is the big deal? This is nothing. This is a woman who is speaking her mind and in no way getting off the reservation. Every single statement, I've kind of parsed it individually, is true. Barack Obama's dad was a complete deadbeat. In fact, he was gone even before Obama was born. The interesting question there is how Obama basically developed this kind of reverential psychosis toward this deadbeat dad, who was a leftist, a communist, an anti-American, a wife beater, ultimately, basically both his legs had to be chopped off. He was an amputee. He was an alcoholic. He beat his wives. I mean, this is not exactly an admirable character, but yet Obama's like, I revere this guy, the dreams of my father. So that's another story, but I'm happy to say that Sage Steele is going to be back at work next week. So she wasn't expelled. She wasn't fired. They just gave her a suspension. But I don't like the suspension because what's it going to do? If anything, they're basically saying, don't speak your mind. Don't show this kind of personality. They don't want her to be her. And by the way, she wasn't even being her on ESPN. She was doing this on a podcast where they were probing her life and her response to the census. So I find the whole thing deplorable. And even though I haven't been a watcher of ESPN, I am kind of a new fan of Sage Steele. Stop paying for Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile's political and social initiatives. Stop paying for their thousands of retail stores across the country that you never go into. Pure Talk doesn't charge you for any of that fluff. Instead, they give you excellent 5G coverage on the same 5G network as one of those big guys. That's right. With Pure Talk, the average family saves over $800 a year. I made the switch and you should too. You can keep your number, keep your phone, or get huge discounts on the latest phones and Androids. I got this Apple 12 from them. Take a look. It's really sleek. It's really cool. Get unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. Wow. And listen, if you still want unlimited data, no problem. You can get it and still save a lot of money. Go to puretalk.com and shop for the plan that's right for you. They have a 30-day risk-free guarantee, so you literally have nothing to lose. Go to puretalk.com and in a promo code Dinesh, you'll get 50% off your first month. That's puretalk.com, promo code Dinesh. Pure Talk is simply smarter wireless. Guys, I'm really happy to welcome back to the podcast David Horowitz. David is, a friend of Debbie's and mine. He's a noted conservative commentator and national best-selling author. He's founder of the David Horowitz Freedom Center in Los Angeles. He's written a bunch of books, but we're going to focus on the new one. Here it is. It's called I Can't Breathe. And it's, wow, that's a catchy title. How a Racial Hoax is Killing America. And I'm kind of chuckling when I opened the book. It's got a trigger warning on the front cover. This book presents facts about controversial incidents at odds with the conventional wisdom. Read at your own risk. David, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. What a timely and riveting book. And as I was reading it, I was thinking to myself, wow, we have certainly come a long way from the civil rights movement, a long way from Martin Luther King. So we celebrate that poor guy's, birthday every year. But what would Martin Luther King make of, let's say, Black Lives Matter?
Black Lives Matter hates Martin Luther King. They call him a racist. There's no relation whatsoever between the civil rights movement and Black Lives Matter. Martin Luther King was an admirer of Mahatma Gandhi, and he was dedicated his political life to nonviolence. So if you look at the old clips of the civil rights movement, everybody's wearing a suit, no stores are looted, and all the violence is coming from racist Southern cops. And that's the way it should be. So Black Lives Matter is, I think it was Jason Whitlock who had the courage to say it. It's a modern Ku Klux Klan in blackface. That's what it is.
Now, if that is the case, it's puzzling to me that Black Lives Matter is so popular with so many white people. Let's leave aside why blacks might join an organization like this, but you have these woke whites, a lot of them young people, and I think that they are in the tradition of the civil rights movement. How is it that they are getting it so wrong?
Well, you and I have been on college campuses together, so yeah, they're being taught by racists who hate America. Our universities are one-party states. We have never had more ignorant generations in America than we have now. It's shocking. I was shocked when Bernie Sanders got into Congress because he's such a dubby. But then, and they topped that with Ocasio-Cortez and all of them. They're idiots. They know nothing. They know nothing of America's history. America is God's gift to black people. The slavery existed in Africa for 1,000 years. Well, you know this very well, Dinesh. For 1,000 years before a white person ever set foot there. And it was considered a normal institution in all societies for 3,000 years. And here I'm just quoting a very smart black sociologist, Orlando Patterson, who's written a little library of books on slavery. Until white Christian males, Wilberforce in England in the 18th century and Thomas Jefferson in America, said that liberty is a God-given right given to all human beings. And that spelled the end of slavery, at least in the Western world. It still exists in Africa. Muslims still get away with it.
But, I mean, think of the irony, David. You know, you've got the slavery in America could not have been ended by the blacks by themselves, right? There were a few sporadic black revolts. They amounted to nothing. So there was no way for the blacks to do it. It had to be done. If it was going to be done at all, it had to be done by the whites. So the whites laid the intellectual foundation for it with people like Jefferson. And then it was white armies, the Union armies, the Republican armies of the Civil War that actually achieved the end of slavery. And so all of this history, it seems, has now being erased in favor of a narrative in which basically whiteness is bad.
Exactly. And with the collusion of the Democrat Party, that's the real problem.
And with the collusion of very successful white people. I mean, it's not just the students. You know, there are white journalists, there are whites in powerful positions in academia and in media, but also in corporate America. And that's kind of what I'm getting at is, how do you explain their willingness to sign on to a narrative that, in a sense, is an indictment of themselves, I guess, to a degree, and is manifestly false?
My Marxist mentor, Isaac Deutscher, once said to me that, David, he said, the problem with politics is that people have a hard time adding two and two and getting four. And part of the reason that they have such a hard time is they're intimidated. There are very few brave people or, you know, if you want to get involved in Socrates' examination of bravery, they could also be stupid people. If you don't understand the consequences, and I plead guilty to that. I remember when Peter Collier and I came out as conservatives, Peter said our literary careers are over. I thought he was crazy, but he was right. We went from the front page of the New York Times to the back page to not being there at all. I think intimidation is the biggest part. When I became a conservative, I lost every friend that I had in life from the time I was a kid till the time I was in my mid-30s. And it's a little scary when you have to go through that. Can I put together a life in midlife? Well, it turned out I could. So I'm happier for it. But I think these are huge factors. Until I had to pay the price of losing all my friends, I didn't realize how much that was in the back of, has to be in the back of every leftist mind. If I deviate, remember, even Christopher Hitchens, he deviated on abortion. I'm searching for a bad enough term that's not too bad for Todd Gitlin saying he wouldn't admit Christopher Hitchens into his house for having a deviant opinion like that. But that's the left is not free. They're not free in their politics. They're acting under the gun. Well, here's an example of how intimidated people are. A week after the George Floyd verdict, and let's face it, Black Lives Matter is a national lynch mob. First, you get the verdict. Every cop that shoots a Black person, no matter how criminal they are, no matter how armed to the teeth they are, no matter how whether they're actually firing at the police, every Black is innocent and every cop is a murderer. That's what you start with. Then you go to the, well, you don't even pay attention to the autopsies, the toxicology, the evidence.
David, let's take a pause here. When we come back, I want to pick up this theme because this is the heart of your book and look at a couple of these cases to show how they're built on just racial hoax. We'll be right back. Debbie and I decided to give up bread a while ago to save on carbs, and boy, did we miss it. That is until we tried this new bread from Uprising Food. We love to eat our avocado toast with Uprising bread every morning now, and Debbie found it has only 2 net carbs per serving, 6 grams of protein and 9 grams of fiber. William and his team at Uprising Food have cracked the code on healthy bread. You simply can't find something this healthy, that tastes this good, that's this fresh. Uprising has made prebiotic fiber delicious, and their patent-pending breakthrough in psyllium husk activation makes fantastic digestive health absurdly easy for all of us. For me, it's all about the taste, and when I find stuff that tastes great and is good for me, well, I'm sold. Uprising Food has absolutely nailed the taste factor. Uprising is offering our listeners $10 off their starter bundle. That includes 2 superfood cubes and 4 packs of Freedom Chips to try. Go to uprisingfood.com/Dinesh and the discount will automatically be applied at checkout. That's uprisingfood.com/Dinesh to get $10 off your first purchase of the starter bundle. I'm back with noted conservative writer and commentator, our friend David Horowitz, author of the new book, I Can't Breathe. It's what I find really strange about all this. We're in a big country, and it would seem that one could find plenty of examples of racism. Now, you could take those examples and generalize to America being a racist country, but you would think that the left would be able to find some really good examples to build their case on, even if they were overgeneralizing from those examples. What you show in this book, which is really devastating, is you pick their cases. You pick Freddie Gray, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd. You go down the list and you show every one of these is bogus. Every one of these is based on a hoax. How is it that intelligent people can't even find good cases that would support their narrative without having to lie about them?
America is not a racist country. Look, Blacks are 13% of the population, but they're the lion's share of the athletes who are the icons for our youth. There must be 70% of the personalities that you see in advertisements on TV. Why would a major corporation risk losing racist customers if they thought their customers were racist? They know that they're not, and that they can portray integrated companies. I think it's a great thing that while Blacks are only 13% of the population, they're 70% of the middle class law-abiding people that you see in ads on television, loving people, intelligent people, doctors, lawyers, and so forth.
Well, not to mention the outsized influence in entertainment. Think of the influence of Blacks in music, in Hollywood, in the whole...
Right, a dominant force in our... You can't think of American culture without thinking of Blacks. And they're the chief beneficiaries of all of the goodies doled out by government. First in line to get a place at a university, a prestigious university, they're given 200-point advantage on the test scores. First in line to get a job, first in line for a promotion, first in line when you're looking for a board member for Coca-Cola or something like that, you're going to look for a black female, probably, which is how we got Kamala Harris as our joke as a vice president. You could just go on and on. What I was going to say about the George Floyd case is, and as a sign of how sick our media culture is, within a week of the Chauvin trial, he's the police officer with the knee on the neck, 60 Minutes interviewed Keith Ellison, who did his apprenticeship, an 11-year apprenticeship as a spokesman for the worst racist in the country, the most disgusting one, which is Louis Farrakhan, anti-Jew, anti-gay, anti-white. This was Keith Ellison's idol at the time, I guess. He went from there to being chair of the Democrat Party, which tells you everything you need to know to appreciate Dinesh D'Souza's books on the Democrat Party. They interviewed, 60 Minutes interviewed Keith Ellison, who was the attorney general from Minnesota, therefore the chief prosecutor of the George Floyd case, and said, was there a racial element, that's a brave question, in the killing of, or in the death of George Floyd? And Ellison's answer, we couldn't find one. Well, if he couldn't find one, you know for certain there is none. And there was none. And if you watch the trial, nobody testified that Derek Chauvin had racist attitudes or even in anger ever uttered a racist epithet. And you would expect that to be the headline in every paper in the country. The George Floyd riots, criminal riots, nobody ever really prosecuted. They were caught and released for perpetrating them. Billions of dollars. The worst civil destruction in the history of America in peacetime. Absolutely the worst. Scores of people killed directly by Black Lives Matter rioters. Thousands of blacks in the inner city dead because of the defund the police movement, all based on a hoax, which is that there was a racial element in the killing or in the death of George Floyd. It's hard to know who killed George Floyd except himself. He had four times the lethal dose of fentanyl in the system when he died. You can't kill somebody by pressing your knee on the side of their neck. This is the windpipe. What you do is you shut off a blood vessel to the brain, cause them to pass out, and so they cease to be a danger to themselves and others. You could just go on and on with what's wrong with the whole Black Lives Matter movement. And they're all, Patrice Caleris was one of the criminals responsible, a pathological liar. She's appropriated, or is it expropriated, $4 million from the Save George Floyd Fund or whatever it was for her personal houses and justified it. And this is classic. When the Sandinistas took over in Nicaragua, they moved the rich out of their houses and moved into them. That's a communist mentality. And you have all these idiots who believe that rhetoric is reality and believe what they say. You can't believe what any of these people say about anything.
Unbelievable. David, you have told a great story and a very telling story. I love the way you systematically go through these cases. You take them down one by one. And that only creates a more surreal feeling about what we're living through, a narrative that is not just based on a little bit of evidence. It's based on no evidence at all. And yet it is promulgated every single day through every major institution of America. Let me ask you a closing question. Are you pessimistic about the country, or do you think we're going to awaken and see the nonsense around us and fix it?
I forget the name of the psychologist who wrote the book on optimism and pessimism. But they're kind of inborn characteristics. I don't think anybody's identified the optimistic, whatever it is, lever inside you. But people who are optimists lead happier lives. So I'm an optimist here. I think America is totally turned off the Biden administration. And they're going to take a drubbing, whatever race they run, and deservedly so. When I watch Jessica, what's her name, on Fox, the liberal on Fox, defend the attacks on parents, complaining about what's being rammed down their kids' throats, you know, I fear, as Jefferson said, I tremble for the future of my country when I consider that God is just. But then when I see those parents standing up and not being intimidated, I say, we're going to win.
Thanks, David. I really appreciate it. Thanks for joining me on the podcast. This was great.
Thanks for having me, Dinesh.
I've been on Hillary Clinton's trail for a long time. In my film, Hillary's America, I detailed the danger she posed to our country. Now, fortunately, the American people got the message. But there's still more that must be done to reveal the ugly truth about the Clintons, the Clinton Foundation, and their corrupt ways, especially since the Biden family seems to view the Clintons' example as a how-to guide. Now, you won't find the truth about Hillary or Biden in today's fake news media. You have to turn to a powerful source like the Capital Research Center. My friends at Capital Research Center expose the left like no one else can. Now they've released an eye-opening new report that lays bare the corruption of the Clinton crime family. It's called By Hook or By Crook. Want to read it? Then go to capitalresearch.org/Dinesh. You'll get the chance to order a free copy of By Hook or By Crook and learn the facts the mainstream media won't touch. So again, that's Capital Research, C-A-P-I-T-A-L, research.org/Dinesh. Check it out. I want to conclude today my series on Alexander Hamilton, one of the five key architects of the American founding. This is part of my Prager University video series, five videos, 5 minutes, collectively called The Making of America. You can watch those, by the way, on PragerU.com. And I want to talk about what Hamilton did. In each of the videos, I focus on one issue, Jefferson and equality, so Hamilton and capitalism. Now, we often forget that one of the main driving forces of the American Revolution, I'm talking about the American Revolution of 1776. In some senses, there were two American revolutions, the Revolution of 1776 that produced the Declaration and produced independence, and then the Revolution of 1789, which was the Constitution in both senses of the term, the making, the forming, and then the writing of the Constitution, which came more than a decade later. Now, in 1774, George Washington was asked about why the United States is considering breaking off from Great Britain, and he says this, "Great Britain hath no more right to put their hands into my pocket without my consent than I have to put my hands into yours for money." Now, this quote, by the way, not that well known. I was a little surprised to find it because I hadn't heard it before. But it shows you that the right to property is a key principle at issue in the American Revolution. And what I've been arguing is that against the old ethic of conquest, in which things are taken from other people by seizure or by force, America developed an ethic of wealth creation, of technological capitalism. You don't have to go rob another guy. You can trade with him. You can make new things. So Alexander Hamilton himself realized in his own life that kind of upward mobility that commerce and capitalism makes possible. He was the son of a West Indian immigrant. He came to America basically with little or nothing. And he wanted this upward mobility to be a defining characteristic of this new society. Now, let's remember that the other American founders, Washington, Jefferson, Madison, they were Virginia farmers. And if it was up to them alone, America would probably have been set up as a network of farming communities. With you have towns, but the towns are the places where this agricultural produce is bought and sold. But it's Hamilton who was an upstart immigrant New Yorker who laid the groundwork for America to become an urban industrial commercial society. Hamilton does this. You can look at his writings in The Federalist. The Federalist Papers, by the way, written by Madison, by Hamilton, and by Jay. But it's known which of them wrote which of the papers. And here is Hamilton talking about the new government in America. And he says, quote, by multiplying the means of gratification, by multiplying he means the rewards. He says the new constitution and the new government can ensure that, quote, the assiduous merchant, the laborious husbandman, the active mechanic, and the industrious manufacturer, all orders of men, look forward with eager expectation and growing alacrity, growing speed, to the pleasing reward of their toils. So he's saying people should be able to keep their own stuff and make more and hire other people to work for them and work hard. This is basically Hamilton's idea of the new American. And notice who's missing, by the way, from his list of all these people, the mechanic, the husbandman, the manufacturer. He doesn't mention the farmer. So Hamilton envisioned America as a nation whose nuclei would be cities, which would be centers of vigorous invention and innovation and trade and new types of people, entrepreneurs, mechanics, financiers, salesmen, all these guys with a kind of naked ambition coming to the city to make it and to make good. And now for, I would say, about a century and a half, America was built on this Hamiltonian ideal. Now, admittedly, and this is an important way for me to close this out, for more than a century or nearly a century, America's been pulling away from this kind of bold, brave free market system. Courts have sanctioned all kinds of depredations against property rights, restrictions of trade that the Constitution does not allow. So Hamilton, I think if he were alive today, would be a little appalled at all these ways of kind of skimming the pie or distributing or redistributing the pie without paying attention to how a pie gets made. Hamilton wanted strong government. That's true. But the point is he wanted strong government because he understood that capitalism itself is based on an architecture of rights and contracts. And this requires a strong government to enforce those things, to be the neutral arbiter of disputes that inevitably arise. So the point is that while Hamilton wanted an activist government, he didn't want an activist government of the kind that the left is promoting now. He wanted an activist government on behalf of, on the side of, capitalism and civil liberties and human freedom. In sum, Hamilton wanted a strong central government, not to undermine freedom, but to protect it.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.